You've
Okay,
frozen yourself.
I've frozen myself. I started
Oh,
recording.
you're unfrozen. You're all good.
Okay, good. Good. Unfrozen. Unbowed,
Oh.
unbent, unfrozened. That's the.
Don't bring your Game of Thrones into this.
Yeah, sorry.
Dead now. Dead and done. And
Okay, so welcome to Freebooters 2. Two Freebooters. We're back and in serious business, baby.
Two freebooters in the space of just 1 year. Like,
Yeah.
aren't
And you don't have to do a Patreon or nothing for this.
you?
You're welcome.
If you'd
Although,
like to donate to Patreon, just set up a Patreon and donate to it.
yeah, or Hamish has a is it Ko-fi? For
Yeah,
this, for
the
the
hosting.
PeerTube instance. So if you ever want to support the Polar Bear Extended Universe, then that's the
Speaking of
that.
the polar, whatever you just said, we just did a podcast with, well, we started a podcast with Hamish where we're watching an episode of The Expanse and then talking about it. Well, the intention is to watch all of the episodes of The Expanse and then talk about them in a podcast. We've just done that on, it's on Hamish's channel. It was really fun to do. If you like seeing us talking, then there's more of that there. And The Expanse is
There's
very good, and we talk about it.
absolutely. Do you want to put a link in the little chat? We've worked out how to do the visuals now. There'll be stuff that goes on in the beneath us in our little windows down there. So if we put like I want to say a link. I feel like it's a bit cruel to put a link down there and then expect people to type it out. We'll try and
Of
work
typing
around the
it
hard.
out.
But
Oh, put it. Where do I put it to make it
in the
do
chat,
that?
so in the chat for
In the
this,
Discord chat.
in the Discord chat.
Oh,
So,
okay.
okay, so yeah, you go to video.thepolarbear.co.uk. You don't need the other stuff. You can find it from just the domain, but that's the. Yeah. So we talk. I haven't seen it before. Are we going to go with the name Space Virgins, considering that you and Hamish kind of like them?
I like Space Virgins, and then just randomly something from sci-fi after it. So like The Voyage Home, or yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. I like that. So yeah. So that'll be, and I think that's pretty much going to be a PeerTube exclusive. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you're shit out of luck, or just
Yeah,
go to the
you're on.
PeerTube channel.
What are you still doing on YouTube, Granddad or Grandma or Grandday?
Grand day. Oh, actually, speaking, because we seem to be popping up with podcast ideas left, right, and center. I had this one the other day, and I genuinely thought it'd be interesting, but I don't want it to sound insensitive, but I know you'd take this in stride. But it's like, since it's basically been 20 years since you've seen the outside world, what's changed? And like, because it occurred to me when we were talking about
Would
the you don't have to like go into the shop to buy
love
petrol anymore. Like, how many things like that are there out and about that have kind of slipped you by?
that. Yeah. This is the thing that I always say to give context, right? The last time I was out and about in the real world, there were no Starbucks.
There were no Starbucks. There are not that many Starbucks. We're more of a Costa Coffee kind of country.
Which is the good one? Which is, I think it's Costa, isn't it? Well, good relatively to, because Starbucks have got like intricate structures to avoid paying tax anywhere, where they charge themselves for their own trademarks and buy coffee at them off themselves at a loss and stuff. But I think Costa does things a bit more decently, right? Also, my sister, I think it's Costa my sister goes to, and she brings me back these little very dark, very bitter chocolate biscuits that are very delicious.
Well, I can't speak to the biscuits, but I think, well, I don't know. They're much of a muchness to, I mean, in terms of like in terms of how they taste in terms of coffee.
Oh yeah.
I don't mind them. Like I will drink them.
I've
It's
got to
more
say,
expensive.
this is a little bit like borderline jingoistic, nationalistic, national pride, patriotism. But like, it makes me a little bit sad that coffee shops are a big deal here. Like, we're a tea country. Come on, it makes me sad that we're moving from coffee to tea.
What makes me sad is that fucking Starbucks charge you through the nose for a cup for a large tea. It's something ridiculous, right? Like
Hot
360 or
water,
something.
fucking leaves.
And it's a pint of hot water with one tea bag in it, right? So the difference
Oh,
in sizing for Starbucks is literally only just the size of the cup and the amount of hot water in it. They use the same amount of tea bag. And I'm pretty sure, like the same amount of milk, but like, I mean, the amount of milk anyway would be indistinct anyway.
But I like to imagine now and then, like, imagine if instead of Starbucks taking over, because Starbucks is everywhere now, right? It's ubiquitous, it's global. Imagine like there was a little English tea shop, like run by, like an old granny or something, and that's what became the global franchise. So you had, like, in America, you had these little, like, tea shops with, like, fucking doilies on everything and, like, everything lacy and, like, and that was the global brand where everybody went to use their MacBooks. That would be such a better world.
Yeah.
And
What
then
would it
the
be called?
from here. What are tea shops called?
Oh, well, a lot of them have, don't they have, like, I don't know, like,
I've been to a
the
bunch of tea shops in my
pubs.
life and I can't think of
They
any,
don't
like, because
have
you don't.
signs. They don't have signs outside,
What I'm
do
saying
they?
is,
They.
when something's not a global or a brand, a franchise, a chain, you don't really think of it. Like, the local takeaway, your local, like Turkish, whatever takeaway, where they do, kebabs, pizzas, burgers, everything. I don't know the names of them at
Well,
all.
ours is called King Kebab, and I know that one because everyone calls it Kinky. That's just like it's, but
That's a good
like,
name.
yeah. I mean, I couldn't, like, I've been to every single curry house in my town many times. However, I get them mixed up in my head. Like, I've got to check the restaurant address on the leaflet. Although nowadays, when it comes to the world of delivery and everything, I don't even have to, like. I think I know them, but I know the ones that do the food that I like, and now, so,
But
but
no,
also,
in terms of how much the world has changed, that would be, yeah, I would be. I mean, obviously, I see glimpses of it because, I watch TV, which is often set in outdoors. And, I have friends who sometimes will call me while they're, like my friend Danny will often call me while she's driving places and going to shops and stuff. So I see glimpses of it, but that would be very different from being in it. And yeah, another one is, like, last time I was out in the world, there were phone boxes.
Yeah, they're either like defibrillators or like lending library kind of things, where like you can swap book swaps and things like
I think that's probably more in, like, larger towns and cities. Like here, I think they're just gone. There's just like a patch of concrete to mark, where they once were.
Yeah, and I do agree with the
And
meme.
it's a bit of a shame because I live quite low close to a low security prison. And back it's less so now, but back in the day, prisoners would frequently escape. And you knew a prisoner had escaped when there was a helicopter hovering, circling the village for like 3 hours with its spotlight out, like trying to find this. And one time I saw the dude just hiding in a phone box for a good, like, 25, 30 minutes while the helicopter was, like, say, because this was a big, the proper phone box is a red one. And he was just hiding in the phone box for 20 or 35 minutes. I was like, in my head, I was like, what can I do to help him? Can I
Like, well, the
distract the
thing
helicopter somehow?
that must be like harrowing to be like as hiding from, that's like a horror film. That's like Alien Isolation or something. That's just
That's so exciting. I've always wanted a video game. And some have almost tried to do this, but I want a multiplayer video game where I'm being hunted by other people, by actual people. I want to feel what it's like to be hunted. Like, I think
kind of.
that not in real life. I don't want to actually be hunted. That would be horrifying. But as a fantasy, I think it would be incredibly exciting.
Oh, I can vouch for this. I have played such a game. Well, I've played a few games that come close to it, but I totally understand that there are not enough games about, like, not enough good hide and seek games, basically. Because
It's hide and seek. Yeah, exactly. Hide and seek as a kid was, yeah.
yeah, there was there so you know the game GTA Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. They had a couple of like that the those that era Grand Theft Auto games, the modders are just something else. They really are. And they did a Grand Theft Auto San Andreas online multiplayer kind of thing, similar to what we've done with or what we've seen with Morrowind. They've done with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, and it's so cool because you've got the cars, you've got the open world, and it is quite the moddable game. But you can have car chases with strangers and stuff like that. Like, it's amazing. And someone can just decide, actually, yeah, I'm going to just fucking attack you, ram you in my car.
There's something interesting about this that we were talking about the other day when we were playing Flatout 2, because you can do all that in GTA 5, right? But it feels different. I think GTA 5 has that modern, I wouldn't say young, because I don't think it's necessarily about age, but that modern gamer thing of like, don't treat other people like people, treat them like NPCs. Like, this experience is for me, you know, and play very selfishly and behave very selfishly. Whereas, because that's an older school game, I think the culture is different. It's more like people are playing with each other, recognizing, you know.
It was, but also there's something about not, you're not meant to, or like there's a bit of an element of like making your own fun. Like, again, with the, which I, that Morrowind, I know I keep just throwing ideas around today, but I want to get back into the Morrowind one. Those were some of my favorite videos to edit that I've ever done. And I think they come out particularly quite well in the short format, to be honest. I might do like other versions or something like that as well. But I think that
I'm always up for playing multiplayer Morrowind with you.
Yeah, but there's something like, obviously it's not a challenging game because you've got two people doing one person's mission, kind of. But there's something about
we've played it for thousands of hours and we know it inside out. Like we know.
There is no shout.
I mean, saying that, we went into that what first cave we went into and got absolutely slaughtered. So it's challenging in that sense. We got dicked.
Yeah, absolutely. But there is also something about, like, this is kind of what I like about a lot of open sourcey stuff. And open source in sort of when we talk about open source games and stuff, like a game with a big modding community kind of is almost, it's very similar. Yeah, you know, scratches a lot of the same itches.
It becomes a community driven thing.
Yeah. But they, oh, sorry, I've completely gone off track, because hide and seek games with the Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, they had various game modes, and you could apply to one of them was called like Hunt the Terrorist or something like that, and so the mod the server mod could select a player, and for a certain amount of time that player would be like targeted on the little map, and then everyone else got like a really good bounty if they took out the nominated person, and if the nominated person survived, they would get a reward too in the form of currency.
Yeah, that's what, ideally I'd want my ideal hide and seek chasey game, hunted game. I want to be in the woods. I want to be in woodlands. I want to be unarmed. And you know, with armed people, and I can hide, you know. But it's very hard to do in real life, that would work very well. But in a game, it's a bit trickier where you've got to.
Very far, just stealing a train and going around the world in the train. Everyone knew where I was, but I was just fast enough to like. Although I didn't win, someone crashed like a plane or a helicopter into me or something, and that actually did it.
Have you ever played any of the actual hunting games? Not the arcadey hunting games where it's how many deer can you shoot in 3 minutes, but the ones where you have to actually stalk through the woods and follow tracks and look for spore and all that kind of stuff.
No, I don't think I have.
I played The Hunter years ago. It's gone a bit shit now. It's gone very sort of free-to-play, freemium-y. But back in the day, it was a bit better. And yeah, you could spend... You would spend hours tracking like a single deer, and you eventually find the deer. You've got your scope on it, and you know you try and shoot it. And once you shoot it, it's wounded, and you've got to follow the blood trail and blah blah. And it's horrific. Like I don't think I could do that in real life. Even in the game, you know, it took me like I really had to psych myself up to actually pull the trigger on this fucking innocent creature. But the process of stalking the deer is incredibly fucking satisfying, you know. I mean, it keys into something, you know, we've been doing for thousands of years, right? Tens of thousands of years.
I mean, I definitely like that like aspect in games. It's one of the things in stealth games I quite like. I think it's got that like kind of although in some cases one's fight, one's flight, right?
yeah I'd rather be the hunted than the hunter is the thing. I basically want to play the deer in one of those games with a bunch of people hunting me, or you know, the fox and you know, fox hunting's barbaric. I like this in no way condoning any of these things, but you know, in a game, yeah, I would love it.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Gary's Mod.
Yeah, that could, yeah, Prop There's Hunt a few... has got a bit of the feeling.
Yeah, I really quite enjoy Prop Hunt. It's
there are those games. I know there's a game on Steam where I can't remember quite how it works, but I think there's one hunter and a bunch of deer, and you are the deer, but you're the other deer are real deer and you're a human deer. So when you walk, you get up on your hind legs and walk. And your job is to like blend in with the other deer and convince the hunter that you're, oh no, I'm a real deer, don't shoot me, and it's prop huntish. And like, yeah. There was a game back in the day, I can't remember, where you had to sort of blend into a party.
Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed.
No. This is it was an indie game way back. So one player was a sniper looking out of, you know, a different building into a party.
God, I think I remember like a Jacksepticeye video or something about it. I don't know. You don't know who he is, do you?
It was one of those indie games that was hyped for years before it came out. And then I think it came out and nobody gave a shit because it had taken so long and other games had kind of done what it was doing. But yeah, it was a blending in game. And I think, I think there's more to explore in those kind of ideas, I think.
Yeah.
Honestly, Whitehall Mystery has got, you know, it's very abstract, but, you know, you've got that sense of being hunted, right?
Spot on, really, isn't it? That's the.
It is, yeah.
There is something. I suppose in the sort of the predator prey kind of dynamic, when you're the prey, getting away is satisfying because you've got that. It's defiance, and it's autonomy and gaining control of the situation. It's like if you've got four people chasing after you and you elude them, that's very satisfying.
It's just reminded me, there's an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine where an alien arrives aboard the ship, and this alien is doing suspicious things. Miles O'Brien, I know you're not a Star Trek person, but Miles O'Brien befriends this alien, and he basically finds out that on this alien's home planet there are two species, and one of the species is the hunters and the other species is the hunted. And so the hunters turn up and they're trying to kill this alien that Miles has befriended, and Miles is trying to sort of save them and get them out of this situation, and the alien sort of explains to him, no, what are you doing? This is my culture. This is what I am. This is what we do. You know, I am the prey. That is my job to escape from that role is not what I want. I want to be the prey and be successful, and, you know. And it was quite good. It was interesting, and that's how you know. Again, I don't want it in real life, but I want to be hunted in a game.
Yeah, well, that's almost the point of games, isn't it? Really? I'm a super safe driver in real life. Like I definitely err on the side of like, not necessarily slow, but like I'm on the extra cautious end of the thing. I love a good racing game. Like, it just gets me going. I'm not good at them either.
Fiction in general, you know, part of its role has always been to explore fantasies that, you know, we know would be damaging to do for real. You know, like you know, so much violence. You know, violent movies and stuff. We love watching, and we enjoy the violence, but. Is that recognition we don't want to do it in real life, but we want to explore those feelings.
Yeah. Should we talk about the picture that we started with down at the chat here? So when we posted, someone was watching last week's video, which is, and also thank you for all the views. A lot of people watched it.
That was nice.
And so we want to, I don't know, lots of good comments, lots of nice comments. And really, when it comes to this podcast, that's like all we're really interested in, you know, like hearing, you know, some bit of feedback, a little bit of, you know, your thoughts on it. Because obviously we don't expect you to agree with, well, you're Linux people. You don't agree with anything that anyone else is saying. That's part of the fun of being on Linux, right? But one of the comments that tickled me was that... Someone posted the meme of the two sisters that are like opposites, because I'm bright colored, da 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 da, and then Drew is there looking like some kind of like, who's that bad guy from Street Fighter 2? Like, he's like,
oh,
like,
I'm not a Street Fighter.
Oh, he's like, someone will know, he's like some Soviet, big Bison? Soviet general.
Is it Bison? Sorry?
Yeah. That's a character in it, but I don't think that it might be actually M. Bison.
I was never a Street Fighter person.
I think M. Bison. Yeah, anyway, so yeah, like yeah, M. Bison, that's it, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so anyway, so what I did is I thought that was really cool. And I thought it was kind of a little bit spot on. So
Yeah.
I did a I did a pixel art of that same photograph, and I thought that's a lot better Freebooters logo than what I was going to do, or what we had before. I literally did that logo, like, I don't even know if it was like 5 minutes before our first episode or something, or even after the episode or something. But this one, I spent a fair amount of time on it, but I'm learning pixel art. Like, I'm still very new in
I love
the.
it. I think it's a really good drawing. I think you've captured the feel of the original without slavishly copying it. It's got a lot of life to it. Yeah, I think that's a very good drawing. That is, and I went to art school, so that's certified.
Yeah, I've had a
got
little
that.
trouble with the goth librarian's eyes, because she kind of had an expression of both seriousness and friendliness that I was not going to be able to capture in pixel art.
It was an almost Mona Lisa like enigmatic like very blank expression with a very slight smile.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
very
yeah.
hard to
Like,
capture in limited pixels for sure.
They're about to go on an adventure, kind of like, and one of them's excited, and one of them's like, "Oh, here we go again."
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I thought, I tried to sort of get it as close as I can. The lady on the left's eyes, I think, took a long time to do, and I finally got them, because basically, eyes are kind of so difficult, because if you get them wrong even just a little bit, they look like they've been like hit on the head with a hammer in cartoons, and they're like, they don't, it's something that's where the uncanny valley sort of cracks open, that's definitely it. And but yeah, I didn't like I ca I wanted to keep the shapes of the picture, but like the closer you get, there's an element of too not too much realism, but too much literalness, that I tried to avoid. Like the noses, I tried a few different various noses, and the trouble is with noses is when you're drawing them with pixel art, they look a lot bigger than they expand themselves a little bit. So I kind of was like, well, I have to do. I had to go in for a bit of a less is more approach.
Yeah, with some things like noses with pixel art is like if you go one pixel this way it's too big, but if you go one pixel in it's comically small. So you've got to just hint at things rather than it's a sketch rather than a copy. Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of like hinting and suggestion, and
Yeah,
it's
but I
a
think
little bit.
you've done well. You've got a good eye for it.
I'm relatively happy with that, but I suspect in 5 years' time or whatever, I'm going to look back on this and go, "Wah-ha." Because when I, you know, my original avatar, that's something like, I think it's like 36 pixels by 36 or something like that. I mean, that's a lot simpler, a lot more minimalist.
Well, the thing
There's
is,
a.
you can get more sophisticated isn't necessarily better. Like cruder isn't necessarily like you look at cave drawings at Lasso. They're compared to like a Renaissance painting. They're incredibly crude, but they're still incredibly beautiful. They're not worse. They're just of a different form. Still very beautiful.
And in fact, sometimes you can see art that's done by, like, every stroke has had a purpose and nothing is wasted. Like, sometimes it's the ability to make something using as little as possible, in negative space and all that kind of stuff, that is the impressive thing.
Absolutely.
I see that in a few like watercolor exhibitions, where it, rather than explicit technical detail. They've just gone for suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah, my camera is...
Watercolour is incredibly... Like, cause I went to art school, I painted. And when I used to paint, it was more like... Okay, my dad was good at watercolour, and he could do that. Like, you know, you plan what you're going to do. Watercolour has to be planned. You can't hone away at it. So you just, yeah, a very broad brush stroke, and it's like, oh, that's stormy clouds, you know, in one kind of like thing. Whereas when I painted, no, it was honing, and you know, it's almost carving the painting out. So like oil paints can kind of do that. I could never with sketching. I could kind of do it sometimes. I like sketching with ink, and brush. That was kind of cool.
I think pixel art seems to be one that I've just landed in, because you can chip away at it with impunity. You can sometimes, what I have done is forked it, as it were, like where you go, you know, I want to take it in a direction, I don't know if it's a good idea, so you make a fork in a road, you know. It's
which you absolutely cannot do with oil paints.
No,
horrible to work with.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it's one of those things where I've never felt like I'm a good drawer, especially when it comes to the things that are known to be difficult, i.e. faces and hands. You know,
hands.
Just
you get hands for some reason. You get hands slightly wrong, and it looks like a fucking mutant.
Well, even AI can't get it.
Yeah.
What is it about hands?
I mean, we're very keyed into faces for obvious reasons, right? Recognizing the emotion that the other person is feeling was incredibly important to our evolution, right? Hands, I don't know. I don't know what the easy explanation for hands is, really. Why do we need to be so good at recognizing? Yeah, I don't know. Because you can get other parts, you know, you can get the legs, the shoulders, the knees, the elbows. You can get that quite wrong and have it still look right, but hands slightly wrong, or slightly not wrong, because you can exaggerate, you know, you can do like very elongated hands, or you know, you can stylize the hands, but they've still got to be a plausible, you know, arrangement of fingers.
It
looks wrong very easily,
and the size as well. This one, you know, it's perspective, like hand, like I think the thing is like, obviously my hand is not bigger than my head like that, but like if I drew that would look bizarre.
I think you can draw that and it look right, because it looks right. But again, new artist, there's a problem with art. There's a problem with learning to draw when people decide they want to learn to draw, and then, you know, they'll watch or read tutorials about how to draw, and then, you know, you learn about perspective and proportion and things like that, and you end up drawing in a very sort of regimented, boring way. I would say forget all of that. The best way to learn to draw is to sketch. Just sketch a lot. This is what they teach you in art school, and they're right. Just get a sketchbook and sketch everything you fucking see, and you'll then develop your own style, which will be way more interesting than, like, because this is real old man rant, but everything's starting to look like fucking anime. Like every new drawing I see by like a new artist, like every person looks like fucking anime, and people in real life are starting to look like anime. It's like fashion is, everything's converging towards fucking anime, and I hate it.
Those eyes are anime.
Your earlier drafts were more anime. This is far less anime, and this is fine.
But anime is, I see. I know exactly why, because anime is kind of like a good crutch to, you know, like, because it's minimalist, but like in a way that's like
easy way to make something recognizable, but it's becoming like a dominant. The dominant aesthetic, and I don't think it's a very interesting aesthetic. And I'm not to say that there has been no anime that is aesthetically interesting. That's not my point. But it's one aesthetic amongst many, and to default to it is just, it's boring. Like, find something else, please.
Is this kind of like when something's easy, it becomes less interesting? Like, you can, with like AI images, all you got. there's nothing interesting about AI images, right? Like, it's just, you've just put some words into a machine and the machine has spitted an image out. Like, the amount of, like...
Yeah, there's been a couple of times where I've been in a chat and somebody's gone, look at this drawing I did, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, it's very good, like, it's a very competent drawing. And they're like, oh, I used AI. And, like, immediately I'm like, well, that's far less interesting then. Which in itself is interesting, because why is that less? It's the same image. Why do I like it if somebody hadn't created it?
Okay, it's like you know when Jesus appears in a piece of toast?
When what, sorry?
Jesus appears in a piece of toast.
Jesus?
Jesus, the Lord and Saviour Jesus. You know those like stories about where Jesus...
Oh, is it, right, I get you. Or you cut open a tomato and it's like in a rosary or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like... There's no skill in it. It's not like saying, oh, you're good at faces if Jesus appears in your...
No, because that is always interesting when Jesus appears on a piece of toast. It's like, oh, that's cool.
More so than AI, I guess. But then,
AI, yeah.
Yeah.
It's because I think as humans, we've got a thing about cheating, and AI feels like cheating. If you show me an image that you created with AI versus you showing me an image you created by drawing it, I feel like you cheated. But what's underneath that is more interesting. Like, why do I care? If the image is the same, why should I attach more value to one than to the other? And so, when you get right down, this is a bit trite, but like when you get right down to it, you know, pens and pencils are tools. AI is a tool for creating an image. It's just a more sophisticated pencil, in a sense. So why should I attach more value to one than the other?
I always think about this because to me, it's a little bit like when you've got Adobe tools that are often considered the best in the industry, and they've got things like AI take someone out of a photograph. Like they've got, and I'm like, well, if you can edit a photograph, like a lot of times it used to be the case in like old internet culture, there would be like photo editing competitions or things like that where you take random photos from the internet and you'd merge them to make a joke or a meme or a thing, like an image, you know, all various kinds of things like that. There was an element of impressiveness to certain, like, to some photo editing, which now, with like the various Adobe tools and the various this and that tools, even manipulating an image so that there's something that's like in your mind, but then sort of manifests itself on the page.
Yeah.
Like, so like smooth stroking on brush strokes, you know, is that cheating? Because, or is it just an aid?
I mean, a pencil itself, is that cheating versus, you know, charcoal? Is charcoal cheating versus you know, ochre and your fingers? And I've always felt this has come up a surprising amount when we've talked, but I kind of disdain photography. I see the way we look at AI is kind of cheating. I've always felt kind of that way about photography is easy. You just, the thing was there, you just pointed, and I know there's more skill in it than that. There's far more skill in it than that, but it's still a hell of a lot easier than drawing or painting, and therefore I respect it less. Which, if you're a photographer listening to this, I know this is wrong, but it's how I feel.
Well, no, you're not wrong, and I can say that because I do. I technically, part of my job is photography.
Yeah.
Although photography for reporting is a little bit more to do with archiving rather than artistic expression. The two aren't obviously, you know, the two are linked. Yeah. But like my job is really to record what's going on a lot of times.
Does it just come down to what we respect about a work of art to some extent? I'm not saying this is the only factor, but we respect the skill and work, the effort and labor that went into it. Is that part of the value of a piece of work?
I think it is, to be honest.
For example,
some of my favorite photographs that I've ever taken, I still had to go to the place. Like, I still had to be a lot of the greatest photographs. A photograph exhibition in a gallery is very different to a painting art exhibition in a gallery. So the last photo exhibition I went into was a lot more historical, like in its nature. It was a lot of photographs from the 20th century, things like a lot of photographs of everything from Beatles, Elvis, Marilyn Monroe to, you know, early cases of nuclear waste being disposed of irresponsibly, and you know, the ABBA fan disaster, and all you know, like, it just had like snapshots in history. Many of those photographs were not like impressive in terms of how in terms of their, I don't know, their makeup, their lighting, or anything like that. They were
purely documentary.
Not purely documentary, but it wasn't pretending not to, like, so for example, one photograph of Marilyn Monroe was her getting ready to go out, and because she was such a person that would only really take photographs in the limelight, it was quite a lesser known sort of side of Marilyn Monroe that this photograph was. So I think documentary is part, a lot of the time, is part of photography, but that's just my perspective.
Yeah, when I'm down on photography, I recognize there's an enormous amount of skill goes into photography. I know that because, you know, I did photography, you know, I've done photography, and I'm bad at it. I don't have those skills, so I can see, you know, I'm aware of their lack, but I still, for some reason, don't respect it as much as drawing and painting or sculpture or whatever. But there was an art movement in the, I think around about the 60s, called photorealism, where they would copy photographs, and they usually use airbrushes, and the end result looks exactly like a photograph. It's indistinguishable from a photograph. And I also have very little respect for that, even though, because this is about the labor thing, there's a ton of labor and skill that's gone into that, but I don't respect it because the other half is lacking, like the artistic sort of the discernment, the creating a beautiful image. You have just copied, you've done the job of a photocopier.
Okay, I've got a fun game. All right, I've just looked up some of my favorite photographs.
Yeah.
Right. So you roast. It's basically roast me, right?
Are these your photographs?
These are ones I have taken. Right. I like
your photographs, aren't I?
Well, I'm just okay. So, but from also like from a talent point of view.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, like, you know, how much praise do you think I'm deserving of this, right? So, okay. So this is one.
That's a nice moment, nicely framed, and like the old lady in the background. Without her, that would be a much worse photograph. It's her. She makes it right.
Okay, so on this particular photograph, a lot of that.
A sign saying "no noodles coming out of her head."
Yeah. But this, see, I like this for a lot of reasons, right? Like the things you pointed out, like noodles. So I did not get lucky in terms of like, there's an explosion there. With that camera, I used a fast, continuous shoot.
Yeah.
So, and I picked the best of. You know, it was taking a photograph, like taking like 5 a second or something like that. So it just goes. So there's no talent in. There's no photographic talent in that.
It still is. It's knowing that something about that is going to make an interest. The fact that you use the rapid thing, I don't think that matters. I think it's knowing that there's something about this that is going to make an interesting image.
Yeah, but I'll also.
It's composition and its mood, and it's, you know, it's a bunch of things that I don't really understand, because like that's a better photograph than any photograph I've ever taken.
Really? I'm
really bad. I took one good photograph that was a pinhole photograph is kind of a whole different thing. It's more like paint.
Okay. I've got another one here.
Before you move on from that one, part of what makes that image interesting is that the fire almost looks fake. There's no bloom or glare I assume it's a very fast shutter speed.
Yeah.
So you're getting none of the sort of luminosity of the fire. There's no glow coming off the fire. The fire almost looks superimposed. but you know it's not because of the kind of photograph it is and the setting, and that makes it that slightly jarring, and something jarring always pulls us in, you know.
I mean, the color, I played around with the colors, so I don't know if that, so it's not a pure, like,
No, it
it's
never is,
not,
though.
no, oh no, it
Often
never
you
is, you know,
can
like I
adjust
was.
the colors, whether you do it or whether the camera does it, because it's the default. It doesn't matter.
Exactly, yeah. So I quite like filters. I kind of like the vibe that they give. I like that there's a.
Was this taken with a phone?
Nope, this was taken with
Who's that camera?
a camera. The lens on it was that would have been about, oh, I don't know, like 200 millimeter lens, I think.
Yeah, so another thing that would have made this photo less interesting, because you could have used an narrow aperture so that the background was blurred and the main figure in the front was in focus, right? Which, if you were doing it more documentary style, that's probably what you'd do. But that in this case, I think the long depth of field makes it more interesting. And the fact that the people, they're slightly out of focus, but the people in the background, you can still see them, you can see their expressions and stuff. I think that helps it as well.
So the ne this next one is a little bit more ab not abstract, but it's less documentary.
Oh, that was lovely. Yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah, that's just cute.
Yeah.
That's almost I don't mean this insultingly, but that could be in a stock photography library.
I
It would
know,
be quite
yeah, no,
popular.
I
It's like,
totally.
not in a bad way. It's just it's an easy image, but it's nice.
Well, that one again was kind of purely by luck. It's the same camera, but that camera does not do so well in low light conditions. So every so so the light of the lantern gave you a crisp outline of the heart, but everything else was blurry, and that was
That's
kind of.
part of what's nice about it as well. It also makes it a little bit more painterly, less crisp.
What are the oh well okay so this is one that I like it a little bit more from an artistic point of view, but I don't know if I'm actually happy about the colors. But
That's the one I was waiting for. That's got a little bit. As you've got a few that are like, it's a little bit, what people call accidental renaissance, which they really mean accidental baroque. What people think of as Renaissance painting is really Baroque painting. Renaissance painting was very rigid and very static. Baroque is where the emotion comes into it. Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. Yeah, it's just straightforwardly got that kind of, that Baroque appeal. There's drama to it.
And that one's from the 2019 general election, so that was like five prime ministers ago.
Only five.
Maybe not, maybe more, I don't know.
Well, four prime ministers and oh God, I forgot, I've ruined my own joke. What's the name?
Liz Truss, the cabbage.
Four prime ministers and Liz Truss.
Okay, this one is a bit interesting. I don't know, it might not be. Right, so this one is quite heavily edited. I don't know which one to do exactly. Okay.
That's nice. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
does that,
It's a
I don't
mood.
even know.
That's just mood. It's mood and composition there that make it,
That,
right?
yeah, that's a little bit like accidental Wes Anderson.
One of my favorite photographers, I can't actually remember his name, but he's one of those who just like sort of broke all the rules of photography, of art photography. I think he got quite famous, but he was just a very working, like lower working class kid, and he just took pictures of his family in their working class house, in sort of like kind of odd situations, and it breaks all the rules of photography, and it's very, very good.
I love
I'll
doing
try and.
stuff like that. I remember when YouTube was like new and exciting, and we didn't know what it was, right? So there were some people that were abiding to very cinematic rules, and now that seems kind of weird. And now, like, there's a post YouTube video thing in the form of vertical video, TikTok, Shorts, Instagram, which is an entirely progressed art, like media form beyond that. Where
I think it's in, because early on in YouTube, people were like, "What is this?" And like you say, some of them were going quite cinematographic. But now, what YouTube has settled on is just like a TV aesthetic, which is the worst of all worlds. It's fucking horrible and boring. And if I wanted TV, I would have stuck with fucking TV. I want not TV. Stop making TV. And when I say TV, I mean presented shows. I don't mean dramas. And I mean, like fucking everything looks like a breakfast fucking TV or children's TV. But stuff has gone toward, like with TikTok and with shorts and everything, stuff has gone towards. So there was a Soviet artist called Ziga Vertov, not his real name. They all had pseudonyms. And his big thing was called Kino Eye. And what he imagined was everybody in the Soviet Union or everybody in the Soviet world would be given a camera. That was his dream. And they would all take like just a five minute like video of their life. Like, this is my life today. And then these would all be sent to like the local region, and the best of those would be sent to like the capital, and these would be shown on cinemas. So everybody in the Soviet Union, when they went, they get to see their feature film as well, but they go to the cinema and for like, half an hour, they'd see snapshots of life around the Soviet Union, like, as a way of, connecting people and humanizing things. And like, and that's literally TikTok. It's literally what we've done. There's more talking to camera than just showing people your life, but it's essentially we have 100 years later we've realized Ziga Vertov's dream of Kino Eye.
it was
probably this country that did it.
I'm totally with you there. Like, I feel like it's a bit of a shame that YouTube almost kind of fumbled this in the way that they did, because that's what I think about with PeerTube, right? Where like PeerTube can be something that isn't just another place for YouTube. It needs to have something distinct, I think taking
the money out of it. I mean, people can still have Patreons and so on, but YouTube now, this has come up before. YouTube, even people starting a YouTube channel now, you can't help but think, maybe I'll be really successful, and then like, how do I get successful? So let's do all the things that will make me successful, which is part of what homogenizes everything and makes it the same. Whereas the people in PeerTube, they're necessarily less interested in money. They're far more likely to doing it just for the love of it, and I think that's going to affect the aesthetic and make it more like, like we do. We don't care. It's lo-fi. Mm. It's turn your camera on, start recording, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a YouTuber. Oh, can I just? This is a slight tangent, but I've been thinking about it a lot recently. Is like the average YouTuber sort of background, with all the fucking dolls and the toys and the lights and the RGB. No, yours is nothing compared to, like, it's toys fucking it's toys.
This is Christopher Johnson.
And like, it's that hype. Why are we leaning into, in particularly in this time, in with climate change and austerity, why are we leaning into like hyper consumerism as the default aesthetic? And I'm sure this is overblown, but I've been sort of reading about how Gen Z people are rejecting consumerism to a large extent, and they're just buying less. And obviously in the mainstream press, this is characterized as a problem. But I can't wait for Gen Z, that aesthetic, to become, just more sort of like, in the truth, that's austere, and like, why am I buying all this fucking useless junk? And because in the background, it's just tat. It's just rooms full of fucking toys and stuffies and fucking plushies and just tat, just utter fucking waste that's killing the fucking planet.
Was it one of those things where it was originally supposed to be ironic and then kind of got out of control and then
it was ever ironic. These people, the kind of people who get successful on YouTube, because like they're into like, nerd culture, which apparently means collecting every fucking doll and Lego and just like, just shit. Shit. My room's a fucking disgrace, but I'd rather have this than fucking dolls and fucking Just the absolute detritus of capitalism, useless plastic fucking things. I'm getting very angry.
It's nerd culture as permissed by capitalism, right? you know, like it's like the girl boss thing. It's like, you know, when women started having disposable income, that's when Walt Disney started featuring the girl boss heroine and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's I know it's very cynical to say, but it's like, it's money. It's always about the money.
It's so depressing because nerd culture was, we, you know, nerds were the ostracized, the weird, the weirdos, the people, you know, who, the more sincere people whose sincerity was embarrassing to other people, you know, autistic, and like just people who didn't fit in socially. And it was never a commoditized thing. And now it is seen predominantly as this, oh, you're a nerd, that means you're into Star Wars, Star Trek, Game of Thrones, like you have to be into all of them. Like, it's not, it's just this packaged fucking container now, rather than like you got to be into, like, nerd culture overlaps with, I fucking hate anime. Like, if you love anime, great, I'm glad that you enjoy it. I personally fucking hate it.
I don't understand nerd stuff. Like, so culture exists in you know, production and consumption, right, and the cycle sort of thereof, right? The, like, it feels like
that's
but it feels like with capitalism in particular, there is so much more emphasis on the consumption than the production, right? Like, when you think about the capitalistic idea of nerd stuff, you, like you say, you list off the plastic tat, the Star Wars, the shows, franchise, and all that kind of stuff.
Enjoy the things you buy,
but, but like, there's a whole, of course, world of nerd culture out there that is it, you know, like, it's fixing up old computers, and it's doing math problems.
So I don't know how to frame this, but like, if you Google nerd culture, you don't get that, which is the true nerd culture. You get the tat consumption. That's nerd. Yeah. That's what's thought of as nerd culture now.
Yeah,
and it is. It is a part of this. Is more free. This is more Dagoth Hour than Freebooters. But it's that. It's that. It's the recession of all other forms of like, politics has receded to nothing. Like, politics has been replaced by culture. Like, self-expression and self-realization has been replaced by consumer culture. So the only way we can express ourselves, even politically now, is through our consumer choices. I've mentioned that before, but yeah, we've essentially been reduced to, we are brands, first of all, and secondly, our only mode of expression is our consumer choices.
Yeah. So, but to extend that, the sort of the converse can also be true. Like, to choose to live a lower consumption lifestyle is genuinely consequential, though, or as in, like, it's still a that's a valid statement, right? Like, if you're deciding to
it's gonna you know, you or I choosing to consume less is gonna do fuck all to alleviate climate change because that's a production problem. But I mean, you know, if you follow that through, it's a production problem because people consume so much. So it's, you know, obviously, there is a link there, but it would take everybody consuming less. But if that's the way Gen Z is genuinely going, or at least a decent proportion of them, then, you know, fucking Godspeed to them. You're on the right track.
Yeah, and it's symbolically relevant.
Mental and social well-being, because we aren't just consumers. We aren't just what we've been reduced to by capitalism. We are more than that, and we should see ourselves as more than
that. Yeah. Which, actually, interestingly enough, is one of the reasons why, or is sort of in my sort of what I'm thinking about, like, now I've decided that, like, I don't, almost I'm kind of at that point where all branding is bad, almost. Like, when it comes to, like, drawing up a thumbnail for YouTube videos and stuff like that, I've decided to, like, basically just make each one afresh, not use a template, not use any kind of, just
like, no reject uniformity, because it just leads to, under our present conditions, it just leads to bad places.
It leads to, like, it's almost like, so like, branding is fluff, it's additional stuff that you don't need. It's a little, but also it says something. that I'm not entirely sure what it is, but it's something I don't want to say.
I mean, if you go back to its origins, branding is the maker's mark, right? It's a particular company or person made this, therefore I associate certain qualities with it, which, I know that this person makes good kitchenware, so, I get this person's kitchenware. But I mean that can't be applied anymore because everything's so globalized and decentralized that you can't even say Nike, Nike make decent quality stuff because it's made in different places by different people under different, so it is now a brand has become dissociated from any material, anything. It's the brand you're paying for, obviously.
Yeah, but you were saying something about like how, I mean, you were using it in the context of YouTube, but I think that it kind of works beyond it, where you were saying about the two approaches to like sort of dealing with a platform like YouTube, and one is to embrace what the algorithm wants, to play its games, to feed it, as it were, and then the other is to completely go off piece, do your own thing, and expect it to be almost like the trailblazer or the novel thing goes against the grain, because all trends started.
You've also got to you've got to recognize if you go against the algorithm and become successful, then the algorithm will expand to contain what you do, and then that will inform what the norm is. So you're kind of trapped either way. The best thing is to get out from under the thumb of the algorithm altogether. But I wish people would just, because we've replaced creativity with sort of mimicry. Like, I want to make a YouTube channel, therefore it has to have this form, rather than thinking, I want to make a YouTube channel. What would a YouTube channel that I would make look like? Allow it to come from you, rather than to come from, this packaged idea of what that is.
Yeah, and what do you want to say? What do you want to put out into the world,
And how do you want to say it, and how do you want to present it?
It's not like Mr. Beast, which is like his goal is just to be viral at every opportunity. Yeah. I hired a homeless person for $1 and a homeless person for $10,000. Who's better at fighting? What?
Yeah. It's the pure dystopian,
It's absolutely, I bet that there are not many people who watch Mr. Beast and Freebooters. But if you are, let us know.
Oh my God, yeah, there's an intersection there. Or anybody who watches Mr. Beast unironically and also watches Freebooters.
You can't watch Mr. Beast ironically. He's kind of, there's no...
I mean, I honestly didn't hear about him until about a month ago. And when I did, I was curious, so I went and watched a video. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, people watch this. This is kids, isn't it?
It's kids, though, isn't it? That's the thing.
I
played video games. I feel like in a lot of ways I sort of missed out. But also, going back to the art thing. So the new Freebooters pixel art logo, there it is. But I did it on something called Pixelrama, and I think this is a good segment because I've been doing
while you're spieling about Pixelrama, I'll still be able to hear you, but I'm going to go for a piss.
Okay, fantastic. So Pixelrama is it's a pixel art program that you can get on Steam, you can get it on itch.io, and you can actually just play it through the browser. So I'll try and find the website for it. Pixelrama. There we go. And I'll put it in there so you can presumably copy it down or something. There we go. What I liked about this is that it was actually very easy to do pixel art. Basically, you can have a reference image that you lay down if you want to use bits of a reference image, or if you want to just basically do a pixelized version of a photograph or something like that. So a lot of the time, because I need help, lots of different shapes and reference photos and stuff are quite useful for that. You can do a couple of frames of animation, but I've not moved on to that yet. There is also, it's free on Itch. You can download it for, I think it's Windows, Mac, and Linux, and you have to pay for it on Steam, but it is open source. And it's pretty new as far as I can tell, but it's very easy to get started on, and I have just enjoyed playing around with it.
Nice that it's open source, and it's like, yeah, it just looks like pixel art, you know, the basics for if you're starting out. I mean, maybe you can use it if you're an expert as well, but it's the basics, and it's a very clean interface. It looks like a good application.
Yeah.
In the AUR as well, if anybody's on Arch.
Oh, fantastic.
Like,
it's,
give,
yeah,
money, give money to it if you can, but...
Having it as a very simple kind of interface that it doesn't seem like it's trying to do too much, I wouldn't have a clue if like a professional pixel artist would find value in it, but it seems to have all...
Does it have layers?
It has layers.
If you can put a pixel of whatever color you want down and you have layers, what more
you can do pre-palette. You got pre-selected palettes, you can make your own palettes, you can do color wheels, you know it's all got that kind of stuff. My camera's fuzzying up. I'll just reset that. I don't know if it's better than any of the others. I have done pixel art on GIMP before, but obviously GIMP is not designed
it's
not set up for it. So you can do it with GIMP, but
You can do it with anything that can edit an image can do pixel art. But if you're doing specifically pixel art, you want something geared to that.
Kind of. Doesn't that make it one of the more inclusive art forms? It really doesn't take that much to...
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's one of the... That's why it's used in games so much. And I've talked before about my sort of disdain for pixel art. But when I say that, what I really have a disdain for is everything looking like a SNES game. Like, that's where culture stopped. Like, I'm not against pixel art. It's just a way of drawing. It's just drawing, really. The fact that you're using fewer pixels is kind of beside the point. It's that particular style that I'm bored with.
Yeah. What about cross stitch though?
Cross stitch is great. Yeah.
Cross stitch is just analog pixel art.
My mom used to do a lot of cross stitch. She enjoyed that.
I could do the Freebooters logo in.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I love that. It's like it's not a design logo. It's a photograph that I just decided one day to.
Pixelate. When we get hugely successful and we get a deal with whoever podcasts get deals with, are they going to come after us for copyright?
Yeah. They're real sisters, and they have I don't know how much that's kind of engineered for social media. Do you think it was?
That seemed genuine. I mean, you never know, but it seemed genuine. It's just a couple of sisters where one of them is a fucking disgusting hippie rainbow fairy and the other one's a cool goth librarian.
Yeah. Is it a new meme? Because I've seen a few
people...
No,
I think it was like... I can't remember, actually, but I think it was a good few years ago.
Like 10 years ago? We
miss a lot of this not being on Twitter. It was big on Twitter for, you know, a week, as these things are, and, you know, not being on Twitter. I never saw it at the time.
I've only ever seen it on the Fedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did you see it for the first time when it was posted in response to our...
Yeah. That was literally the first time that it was... It tickled
and
me
it was,
so
I don't
much.
Know, I don't know if you watched... I don't think you watched, actually, but it was Malin who posted it to us.
Mm. But on the on the note of the Fedi, there is a thing I did want to talk about. Right, it's the symbol for the Fediverse. Okay, symbol.fediverse.info. That's the thing that I saw got posted on the Fedi. It is a manifesto to propose a symbol for the Fediverse, which is those three stars that you can see there. That is a that's a Unicode character. I think it's called an asterism, and you can get to it. It's supposed to represent asterism. I think that's what I've written down, and you can get to it by doing Control Shift and U, and that means that you can then enter the Unicode 2042.
It's like its official use, the reason for that mm-hmm. symbol existing is in astronomy it refers to a group of stars in the sky. I'm just reading from the site.
Mm-hmm.
And their problem with the default Fediverse, the current Fediverse logo or mm-hmm. symbol or whatever, which I'll put in chat there, is that one doesn't look very good when you scale it down, which is true. It doesn't look very good at small sizes.
Yeah. So I've thought about this more than I should have probably. And I've kind of worked out where I stand on this.
Go on.
That's a logo. That's not a symbol. The three star symbol, that's a great symbol. That logo is a great logo. I don't think
that's a particularly great logo, honestly.
It's
kind of ugly.
I
don't think there's a distinction between a symbol and a logo. Because the point is, on websites where you have, this is my YouTube, this is my Twitter, this is my, the little bird.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be the little bird, obviously. Like, that was a logo, but it worked well at very small sizes, recognizable mm-hmm. and distinctive. The YouTube, all the other logos, they work good at small sizes. Whereas that, just being a bunch of lines that are all going at different angles, when you shrink it down, it just looks like a blurry nothing. And the stars would look better at smaller sizes. I'm fully in favor. I prefer the stars to this. I don't particularly like, I don't hate it, but I don't particularly like this Fedi logo.
I
feel like it's not going to catch on. Like, it's, how is this? Because the Fedi, because there's no one person who can make the decision. Like, mm-hmm. it's not going to happen.
Nor should there, right? Like, I'm totally in favor of this being a completely anarchistic free-for-all kind of everyone uses the logo they want to use, right? That's kind of, that's the anti-corporate,
How about we stop using logos and just use words?
Well, so,
this is why... The reason these shitty small little fucking logos exist is because of shitty phones. And touch screen interfaces were a mistake, and when I'm king, they will be banned.
So...
I have styluses again.
But then again, so this is what I mean by the distinction between the logo and the symbol. So, like the @ being like for email, or the recycling. Like, the thing is with the recycling, that's what they liken it to on the manifesto. The three arrows recycling symbol. No one. There's not like a head recycling company, is there? Like, it is just the logo. The recycling
that is probably standardized somewhere, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but we know what it means.
Are we gonna be like that? Like, get me on three stars here. What the fuck are you talking about? What does that mean?
Obviously, it becomes justified through common use, right?
Through you, yeah.
At the end of the day, no one knows what the, like, in terms of like people on the street, you go out, you talk and stuff. No one knows what the Fediverse is.
What I do like about the previous logo is, obviously it's got the rainbow colors
that's important
in there, and I think the lesbian colors are in there, and the bi, maybe. So that's showing, Fedi's inherent inclusion of sexualities, and also I assume it's got the pentagram, because there seems to be a huge number of witches on the
Fediverse.
Which is, that's cool, but and the stars do lack that. They don't say anything specific, which is again that is a very corporate way to lean. Like, don't say anything, don't offend anybody.
I think to me it works because it's like, from a distance, it just looks like computers connected together. From in a passing glance, it almost looks like a network logo or something like that.
I do like it. It's just aesthetically, it's very nice, simple, clean. I do like it.
But
I hope it catches on.
Does my argument between the difference between a logo and a symbol make any sense?
I don't think so, unless I'm misunderstanding. I think a logo is a symbol. I don't think there's any, you know, it's like a specific kind of symbol, but it is. I don't think there's a distinction between a symbol and, unless you're making a distinction between a print, you know, because in a sense that's a letter, that's a character that one can just copy and paste. If you're making that distinction, then
it's. I mean, yeah. To me, those three stars, that is literally just a shorthand symbol for Fediverse. Whereas now, actually, that rainbow logo. Okay, I don't know, right? I would be interested to hear other feedback on this one, but I think there's a difference. So, you know how the Meta and Facebook and Threads have their own logo for the is it the Metaverse they call it or something like that? But that Threadsy thing, that has a logo. So the corporate Fediverse has a logo in the one that Mark Zuckerberg gave it. So to me, this logo, the rainbow logo, is the logo of the sort of the community corner of the Fedi, the Mastodons, the Acomas, the Miskeys, the PeerTubes, the stuff that's, I don't want to say it's supposed to be here, but it's native to the Fediverse. Whereas obviously Threads isn't. Threads is Facebook that plugs into the Fedi. Same thing with Tumblr and WordPress and all that kind of stuff. Actually, I don't know about WordPress. WordPress to me is kind of the it is the corporate side of the Fediverse, isn't it? WordPress?
No, I would. It's an open source project, but it's a corporate thing.
Yeah. In spirit, if nothing, you know, even
yeah.
But then, Tumblr. Tumblr's still the corporate side. Yeah. Although, I was reading this cool article the other day that the back end for Tumblr is actually going to become WordPress now that WordPress has taken it over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're going to it's going to be the end user.
WordPress is an amazing project that I wish would die. I think it's done so much harm. It's helped with the it's helped with everything being dynamic for no fucking reason. You know, people's personal blogs do not need to be dynamic. And it's also homogenized the web. I mean, I don't care. The web's dead, but it's helped to kill the web by homogenizing everything in terms of, you know, how it functions and how it looks.
I mean, it's... And also, I hate WordPress. I do hate WordPress kind of with the vengeance. Well,
when I'm used to... When I do visit personal websites, you know, most of the sort of people that we know, you know, they use a static site generator or, you know, in your case, literally just static HTML. And it loads so fucking fast. And you go to a WordPress site and it is comparatively very slow.
Yeah. But I mean, there's so much wrong with it as well. Even from the admin side of view, there are some websites who I help other people with and they have the WordPress back end. And it changes every single fucking time it updates, it feels
First thing, if you want to customize anything, it's like you've got to either override the CSS to customize things visually, and you've got to override PHP, and it's a fucking mess of PHP, that project, in order to customize how something functions. And then every time it updates, it breaks those overrides. So if you're maintaining a WordPress for somebody and customize it in any way, it's an absolute fucking nightmare to work with.
Yeah, and big, and... Yeah,
heavy. Yeah,
it's but that anyway, so anyway, there's the corporate Fediverse logo. This is like the fun bit of the Fediverse.
I think what's likely to be used as to represent the Fediverse almost everywhere is going to be the Mastodon logo, which I'm fine. It's a nice logo.
Well, yeah, but do you think that's how it will end? Like, or not will end, but do you think that's
if we're thinking in terms of people linking, you know, using it on their website the way they would use, you know, the Twitter icon, you know, my Twitter is here kind of thing. I think it's most people are going to be on a Mastodon instance, so they're going to be, this is my Mastodon. They're not going to think, part of the problem is people don't.
They might not be, they might be on Threads.
I don't consider Threads to be Metaverse, honestly.
Fediverse.
I know it is. I know it. You know, in a factual sense, it is, but it's not. It's not.
Step aside, Mark Zuckerberg. We're taking over the Metaverse.
If we could do a reverse takeover, that would be great. But anybody who's using Threads, I mean, I'm not going to federate with any Threads instance. So it's not. I don't care. I don't care about it.
I don't care about it. I usually am of the thoughts.
Twitter, Tumblr. I think Tumblr's always had they're not my people, but it's always had a very community driven feel to it. I know it's a corporation, but it's got a distinct community. So I'm happy for Tumblr to interact with us, but the others, as far as I don't care.
Yeah, they're also kind of like, I don't know, they're weird like us.
I don't want to talk to the kind of person who's going to choose to be on Threads or Blue Sky over being on an actual Fedi instance. That's a big part of it, I think.
That, I mean, I think that's actually quite almost all of it, really, is it's okay. I don't want to sound like a NIMBY or a backyard, like, but like it's, I think for me personally, and I know there'll be a lot of people that may disagree, but the Tumblr people are not annoying in the same way that Twitter people are annoying, or that Threads people are annoying, or that Blue Sky people are annoying.
Well, Tumblr seems to be sort of a genuinely nerdy, you know, it's just all kinds of nerds who like, you know, furries, and people are particularly into like a sci-fi series on DW from 20 years ago. You know, it's those kind of nerds, and they're cool. They had their culture. It's always been there, and now they're plugging into ours. Whereas Threads and Blue Sky, they're just attempts to, it's, you know, Twitter without Zuckerberg, which is, you know, Twitter before Zuckerberg was still a fucking shithole. It's not like
it was. Oh, no, you mean Elon Musk. Twitter before Elon Musk.
Who did I say?
Zuckerberg.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Twitter was still a mess. I mean, it's impossible to imagine what Twitter would be like without Elon. What would it be like? It would just be some sort of media, but it would be LinkedIn, really, if Musk hadn't taken it over, I reckon. It would just move more and more.
It would be what it was before. It would be a bunch of journalists and politicians echo chambering to each other and affecting the world more than they should.
Yeah.
But not a place I want any part of. And so I don't care. You know, I don't care.
It's
about
just, no. I mean, now it's just a freak show.
I don't think, I mean, the specific ways in which it has become much worse, like, you know, I know for, you know, black people, any kind of marginalized people on there, it's become, you know, particularly bad now. But in a broader sense, I don't think it's much different. It's still the same fucking place.
More porn. Like, you can't scroll down without there just being a fanny in your face, really. It's just,
I mean,
he's dropped the ball on that one. Yeah, it's. It's just like I think firing half of those engineers, like
all bad decisions. But what
some of them were keeping the porn away. Not that I'm against. It's just like, you know what I mean.
My point is more. It's more. It's kind of like, I think it is exactly this, actually. That, you know, the way liberals would bray about, like, you know, if Trump gets elected, America's going to be like blah. I mean, I'm talking in 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Trump got elected. Was America much different after Trump got elected versus Obama? Was it Obama before him? Whoever was directly, it was Obama, right? Was America much different after Trump got elected? A little bit in some specific ways, but broadly, America was still America. Twitter is still Twitter under Musk. I don't think there's been as big a change as liberals like to imagine.
I disagree. I think that it was the thing is, because it was trending downward for a while. You can kind of like both claim. So it's like, I mean, the number of active users on it has fallen off a cliff. Like
I'm not talking about in terms of. I'm talking about what it fundamentally.
What it fundamentally is.
And fundamentally, it's still exactly what it was before Elon Musk has taken over. It's just got new leadership and has been taken in a slightly new direction. I don't fundamentally hate it anymore. I hate Elon and everything he does. And I hate everything he's done as Twitter CEO, because he's a right-wing piece of shit. But Twitter was no less of a hellhole for me before than after. Like, I've never wanted any part of it. It's a horrible, toxic, disgusting place. Elon taking it over makes very little difference to my perception.
I mean, it doesn't change the outcome of the you know,
in the same way that America wasn't like a wonderful land of, you know, tolerance and egalitarianism and helping other countries out, and then Trump took over and it became, you know, an imperial shit fuck. It was that all the way all the way through.
Yeah.
It's just now you've got an actual asshole in charge.
Yeah.
Same with Twitter. It's a shithole, and now it's a shithole with an asshole in charge. So obviously it's worse, but it's still fundamentally a shithole.
Well, my opinion, and again, this one's a bit for Dagothar rather than Freebooters, is that the biggest problem with America is that you can easily get into a situation where the system is at odds with itself. So, you know, you can have the lower chambers block what the president does and the president block what the lower chambers, yeah, and then yeah. the Supreme Court yeah. just unravels all of it in the end. It's just like... The
balance of powers turned out to be like, yeah, not necessarily... Like, if any what do they call them, like arm of the government can undo anything that any other arm does, then that's a recipe for getting fuck all done.
Exactly, and it is. Like, what I mean...
Everybody agrees on, which is, you know, whatever the lobbyists want.
Yeah, bingo. Well, there you go. That, and it's not even that complicated, you know. Like, that's it. That's it in a nutshell.
We are in. I mean, it's trite to say, but we are in like the, you know, the sci-fi. What's the term for when all the rich people are in charge? A plutocracy, right? We're in a post-apocalyptic sort of horrible dystopian corporate plutocracy, and
it's yeah,
unpleasant.
I was a little horrified to see AIPAC go after, you know, like anyone vaguely pro-Palestinian in the primaries for the Democrat on all the Senate races and things like that. Like,
the thing is that is their job.
Yeah, but they just like they had like lasers, like it's like there were seats.
They're seeing to their interests, and that's their job within that system. And
it's it is the fact that that can even be allowed is mind boggling. It's just like,
well, it's not. It's kind of neither allowed nor not allowed. You know, you could equally set up a body doing the opposite. You know, as a lobbying group or a think tank or whatever, doing the absolute opposite of what they're doing. But there's no interest who has done that. You know, it could be done.
Well, the moneyed interests are going to put their money where the moneyed interests are.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the problem with that is that does very quickly get anti-Semitic type thing. That you know, there's wealthy Jews who want this, but they're, you know, where are the wealthy blah blahs that want the opposite?
Well, I mean, Elon Musk is the wealthiest of them all, and he apparently, according to his daughter, has never sets foot in a church or nothing.
Yeah, well, yeah,
you know, yeah. He's.
Lincoln, I don't know if it's correct, this is received from somewhere, but Lincoln never said a word about God publicly until he became president. Like, you have to, it's part of the job. It's
The thing is, right, so apparently In God We Trust was put on the American notes in the 1960s. If my off the top of my head trivia is correct. So it's not like America has always been that goddy of a country, although some people say it is. Like, this is like a long sort of historical debate.
I think God We Trust as a motto goes back somewhat longer, but there is the, what is it, Epluvium something something, many, many becoming one, or what is it?
I don't know the Latin.
No, it's like another motto.
But yeah, there were
E pluribus unum, which means, God damn it, I'm gonna click through. Out of many, one, and that was it was put on the seal in 1782. And then in 1956, it was replaced with In God We Trust.
Right, okay, 56. So, yeah. So it feels like the godliness is a long and steady, well, has always been there.
I mean, changing the motto to In God We Trust is in breach of the separation of church and state. Clearly, but the problem is nobody fucking cares at any point about the Constitution only applies when it's on your side. Right, and that applies across the political spectrum, which is exactly why I believe having a written constitution beyond a basic Bill of Rights is a terrible idea.
So a bill, so the Bill of Rights would just secure, like, well, conventional human rights type of thing, right?
Yeah. I think having a bill of having guaranteed human rights for people, enshrined in the law, unchangeable, except by great effort, is a good idea. I think everything else is a bad idea because it just, first of all, it doesn't do what you want it to do. Both sides cherry pick the parts that they agree with and ignore the other parts. And secondly, it just becomes fixed. It's so impossible to get it changed because, again, you've got these two opposing sides who want to change it in different ways.
But also, the thing is with human rights is that historically it seems like human rights are typically very, very, very difficult to gain, but very easy to lose. So,
well, no, I, again, enshrined human rights doesn't in the end work very well. I mean, this is where intersectionality and ultimately identity politics was born, before it became the corrupt sort of bourgeois form of progressivism that it is today. In the everybody in America, every person in America has been equal under the law since the 60s, right? Since the Rights Act. Women got it a little bit earlier, and then people of color got it in the and then in the 90s, I think it was a Harvard professor who I think it was intersectionality that he sort of birthed, when he said if everybody's equal under the law, then why do people have different outcomes under the law based on their gender or sexuality or race, which is a very valid question to ask, but again demonstrates why guaranteeing these rights under the law isn't sufficient. Like, it doesn't actually do anything. It's a necessary component, but it's not enough on its own.
Yeah. Well, what about more treaties and agreements?
I didn't mean intersectionality. Sorry, I meant it's critical race theory as well. It was born from that Harvard professor who was asking those questions.
Oh right. Okay. Yeah. But is, like, because obviously if like you say, with the government being able to undo its own stuff, right? So if you've got so the state is the, would you say, is the monopoly on violence, as in, like, you know, so obviously, like, the same institution that sets the basic human rights. So that would, of course, obviously be things like right to life, but also right to dignity, right to, various, like, rights under arrest and things like that. Generally things that it's just generally, like, a freedom from, like, corporal punishment or capital punishment. That's often, things like that. Is it, like, international treaties like European Convention of Human Rights sort of make it so that those human rights are decided by a body that's not the ones enforcing them?
I think that's kind of the only way it can work. Yeah, I think it worked very well under the EU, actually. I think that's one of the things that was good about the EU. Worth noting that the irony that it was it was basically the British who, after World War II, drafted what became the ENCHR. And then, so many years later, just rejected it for a second. I mean, another thing is, after World War II, we designed Germany's political system. It was British political scientists who designed Germany's electoral system, which is better than ours. Like, we designed a perfect electoral system and gave it to Germany, but didn't use it for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's not perfect, but, it's a lot better.
Did we actually go through with coming out of the European Convention of Human Rights?
I don't know, honestly. Also, we're getting a bit.
Right. Okay.
Linux.
Okay. I do have a very technical thing that won't take too long. But I have been using Mojik as my main search engine for a couple of weeks now, and I've got some reporting to do. It's not terrible, but it is definitely like a step down in. So I assume the number of websites that it's crawled. It doesn't quite always give quite as good results as even something like DuckDuckGo, but it's not a million miles off.
What is Mojik? Does it use its own algorithm?
It uses its own algorithm, and it scrapes. It uses entirely its own. It's an independent search engine, so it's not riding off.
Is it a for profit? Because I know I did notice you retweeted one the other day, and I looked into it. And it's just the next Google if they're successful.
It's a smaller. I don't think it's like a non-profit. I think it is just another. Another one, but the thing I think is interesting, partly that they're on the Fediverse, and they're active there. Like I've chatted to them, and they say things, and they're like spiritually, I think they're sort of on a similar page with the small web kind of thing. But really, the interesting thing is like them.
They do have ad results, though, don't they? If it's the one that you retweeted the other, they do have ad results. So they've got the same sort of negative pressures. Before you get too into it, I don't really see the point of replacing one corporate search engine with another corporate search, because they're going to have the same exact, you know, the only reason they're better right now is that they're not big.
Yes. But also, I'm interested to see if it's one of those pieces of software or one of those things that is kind of can only be done by like a big tech, by a Microsoft, by a Google,
right,
or by an Apple. Because, you know, the bigger companies are dropping the ball in some ways with like a lot of this reliance on AI. So it could be that this might just be a more conservative.
I mean, before I've tried alternative search engines now and then, but the problem was that their results were always worse than Google, which. As much as I hate, you know, we hate Google, like you're going to generally use whoever's got the best results and, you know, does the job the best. But Google has become so bad lately. Like it's been getting worse for decades, but maybe not decades, but a decade. But the results are, remember back in the day before Google came, was a thing, and we were, Alta Vista, I think, was probably the most popular one before then. I was on Alta Vista and the results were.
Yahoo?
Bad. Yeah, it was Yahoo, Alta Vista, a few others.
Like us.
And generally, like, you'd search for a thing, and it would generally what you wanted would be somewhere within the first three pages, right?
Yeah.
And then Google came out, and you search for a thing, and the thing you were searching for 99% of the time was the first result, and that was amazing. Now Google is about as good as Alta Vista was before Google came out. Like it's really fucking bad now. And to be fair to Google, it's not entirely their fault. It's because all this information is now in all the silos, right? The information that you're Googling is either in Reddit, you know, less likely Facebook or Twitter or whatever. But yeah.
Or Discord even.
It's hot. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's sometimes outside of what Google can reach.
And also, so one of the things.
Easier. It would be easier for me now to switch because Google's not good. So anything that's barely serviceable would be viable. I don't see the point of going to another corporate one, honestly.
It's not, it's more of it's not a systemic solution. It is just a... It's almost like a bit of a rewind in the technology, possibly one of the ways to go. And like, so if you know the website specifically, so if I was, for example, looking up the Fediverse logo website, I knew the keywords for, and I know that it exists, but I can't just remember the URL. It's not bad for that. If you know, to be honest, even things like DuckDuckGo, which I'm assuming are somewhat vaguely private enough, you know, for my uses, but they do use, is it Quantcast or Bing or something like that? Yeah.
DuckDuckGo is bullshit. All of DuckDuckGo's claims, I mean, you know, I'm probably going to, they're going to sue me over this. Complete fucking bullshit. It's just fucking Bing. They're just proxying Bing. They give you better options in terms of on their website. They give you more privacy options, sure. But that's such a small piece of what matters, such a minuscule piece of what matters, and they know that.
I don't even use Bing to be honest. Like I don't even like. Is DuckDuckGo more popular than Bing? I don't know. I use DuckDuckGo. To me, works kind of well enough. But also with Reddit in particular, because there is a lot of content on Reddit. I think Google might be the only search engine that can actually scan Reddit pages. I think
That's
they
another
made.
problem now is, yeah, they're doing they can just do deals with the big sites and say only you can index us. Because yeah, a lot of the time if I'm searching, there's various kinds of searches, right? And the searches that no search engine is good at anymore is the very specific multi-keyword ones, which Google used to be very good at, especially when you could still use the plus, which they got rid of for that failed social network. Yeah, Google was great then for very complicated searches. None of them are good at that now. So now when I'm looking up specific technical information, I just add Reddit to the search because I know if I'm going to find it, it's going to be on Reddit. It's either going to be on one of those sort of questioning answery websites or it's going to be on Reddit. Stack
Although that being
Exchange.
said, I the thing I like about Mojique is that it doesn't have Reddit on it. It the slimness does seem to res, seems to it seems to direct me more in terms of the in the open web direction, or it
That's
steers
good.
me
That's nice.
more towards websites than it does towards the silo
That's
stuff.
cool. Yeah,
And that
that's
is one
cool.
of the areas of improvement that I do think make it better. Whether or not that will continue, whether or not that will change because of
So
all these big sided sites.
it's less what we use Google for, and it's more going back to like a way of exploring what's out there in terms of people's actual websites and stuff.
Like, I mean, I'll look
More
up.
like before we had search engines, we had web directories, if you remember web
Like it's
directories.
a little bit more in that kind of ballpark. So yeah, like it's definitely not a systemic thing. I think I did see on the Fediverse an actual open source search engine top to bottom. But the thing is with those ones is if they ever were to become successful, could the algorithm be exploited on the basis that it's, open? I
Probably,
don't.
but the algorithm, people sort of reverse engineer it anyway, so does that really matter? Because there are search engines that are open and decentralized, right? Was YARC, was that one? That might be one that's from way back. But I do remember there were some that were open source and decentralized, which is nice, but the results were never quite good enough.
So I mean the thing is, like, I noticed that with like YouTube, like I think Google has enough information on me to know what I like. On YouTube Shorts, it gets me down pretty well when I'm flicking through the YouTube Shorts. It's got
Oh,
a
on YouTube,
mix.
yeah, its recommendations to me on YouTube are very good, yeah.
It
But have you
really
ever dug into the Google ad thing, and there's somewhere where you can click, and it tells you what it thinks of you, as in like whether you're married, how old you are, what your income is, and that kind of thing.
Oh, it's been a long time. I should give that
Because I looked at mine.
a.
It got something weirdly right, but it got a lot. Like I think it thought that I was like a 50-something-year-old housewife with like four children or something. Like these are some of the things that I guessed. I can't remember specifically, something like that.
Oh, wow. No, I don't think so. I think I might have seen that on Twitter at some point, and it vaguely got it kind of right. But it shows me stuff like woodworking stuff and like just random craft projects and stuff like that. And
You know what pisses me off on YouTube lately is that they'll do this thing, they'll replace the YouTube logo with like the YouTube logo plus a thing, and it'll be like a, and then it'll be a full banner at the top, and it's like explore the world of like people who teach each other how to write novels on YouTube, and it's like if I was fucking interested in that, I would search for that. What's the point of advertising something absolutely fucking random at me? And I'm coming to resent that. It's irrational, but I'm coming to resent that more and more, and it makes me hate the group that's being advertised.
It's yeah,
Because
brings
it's more of that homogenization of YouTube of like the form is settled. Like every YouTube channel, regardless of whether it's about some science fiction show or knitting or whatever, the YouTube show is going to look the same, just the content is different because that's how they
Will it
see
be sponsored by NordVPN or Raid Shadow Legends?
Yeah, Raid Shadow Legends.
Squarespace?
$1 shave. Fucking Squarespace. Yeah, so the form will be the same, and that's depressing. I don't want to live in a world where YouTube is just a front end to. I don't know how to express it, but that's such a dull fucking world.
The revolution will be sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends.
I
Have you ever played Raid Shadow Legends?
Before you go on, this week's Freebooters is brought to you by Raid Shadow Legends. If you would, like, I don't know anything. I can't even do the spiel fake because I don't know anything about Raid.
I kind of don't want to. Like, I'm not installing it on a device that I need. But
I keep getting this one because I've told you, because I'm using Qt browser and Google is at war with ad blockers. So I'm actually getting ads now and then, right? And one of the ads I get on almost every video when I get an ad is it's an advert for some mobile game. It's got a very generic name. It's like called Hero Quest. It's not Hero Quest. That was a board game, but it's something like very generic like that.
Kingdom
right?
Heroes.
Every advert is like a cartoony little man, like a little fantasy warrior.
Yeah,
and a huge lady of some sort, and sometimes she'll be like a dominatrix demon, sometimes she'll be like a blonde princess on a throne, and she'll like open her legs or something, and then the little man will fall through a hole. There's something very sort of like sub-dommy sexual about it, and then it sort of shows you what the game is like. It's got this very weird like sexualized, like, I'm not being like, we're European, we're not Americans, we're okay with sexuality. It's not that, but it's such a weird, because it's got this very kiddie kind of feel. It's really odd. Really fucking odd.
If anyone here has actually played Raid Shadow Legends,
let us know what it is.
Let us know. Isn't it going to be wild when, like, the AI slop is going to reach like video games and apps where you can literally, I know you can already do coding, but it's like, make me a game where you're just, and it's going to have this horrible like slop of.
Actually, when ChatGPT was first sort of being talked about and stuff, I was talking to Falcon. She was doing, they were doing their homework because they were doing like CompSci, and their homework task was to make a sort of a text adventure RPG game with multiple rooms in Python. And I was just curious, like, could ChatGPT do this if I just, type in your homework assignment, basically? And ChatGPT gave me a Python game. And structurally, it made sense. It was a bunch of rooms. It was like seven rooms, and you could go from room to room and pick up objects and stuff, right? Except that it had only made a door between rooms one and two. So you couldn't get to the other. I had to look at the code to see why this game was so small, and it forgot to connect up the other five rooms, which is, I think that's indicative of the kind of thing we're going to get,
But then, we've had asset flips on Steam and all that kind of stuff as well, so it's not, these are battles that we face.
I mean, 90, no, that's probably over the top, but like a good half of all games, because there's so many fucking games on Steam now or anywhere, like half of it is worthless slop either way.
I remember when it was a big deal we made when there were 2,000 games available on Linux. Now or something to that effect, right? Now, according to like the Steam Deck statistics or something, there's like 30,000 or 60,000. I don't even know.
Ones that are officially sort of tested. Like, I would imagine, like, it's like all but three work on Linux at this point. You know what I mean? It's the ones with what's it called? The multiplayer. What's the term?
Anti-cheat.
Yeah.
Basically, anything that's not anti-cheat, the number has ceased to have all relevance, right?
A couple of years ago, when Proton was normalized and it mostly worked, I would look at a game, I'll go, I fancy that game, I'm going to buy that. I'll check ProtonDB. If that's okay, then I'll buy the game. Now I don't even, but I just buy the game assuming it's going to work, because I can't remember the last time one didn't.
Some of the racing games, but since you've put me on to Flat Out 2. Which works beautifully.
I love that Flat Out 2 has got all the same bugs that it had on Windows.
That's amazing. But also, Flat Out 2 installs and runs on Linux. Like, it did for me, zero, platinum, platinum level. Yeah. But don't you know people who have Windows that tried to install it and had problems?
My niece, it just won't run on Windows 11. And I googled it, and it's a common thing. And you have to fuck around quite a lot to get it working on Windows 11. Yeah.
Same thing with Deus Ex Invisible War. And a lot of these.
I think quite a few games. Yeah. A few games that struggle on Windows 10, Windows 11, but just work flawlessly on Proton. I feel, when that happens, I feel unreasonably smug.
Yeah, totally. But then the thing is with me is that I don't play modern games. So
No.
even from a gaming point of view, Linux is my best shot, is the best complete pragmatic best operating
I
system.
that relates to, I mean, this is
There's
Linux, and I sort of teased it last week. I'm just bored of modern, even indie games now, because indie games now aren't really indie games. They're all like just mini studios. So like, and they've, you know, become conservative in the way that big studios were, which indie was a reaction to. So all modern games now, obviously this is hyperbole, but all modern games now are fucking boring, and that's part of. So my little toy game, the Switch. A little, and Anthony, when it boots up, it's kind of nice, right? So it says, I don't know if you can read that. It says,
No.
Mio, but it says, Linux gaming or something like that. It mentions Linux
Ooh.
right on the first
That's
screen.
good.
So yeah, there's my little interface. That's, so I can go to my game. So yeah, but my point is, so new games are shit, so I'm going back to old games and seeing if any of them are good. There's Tactics Ogre or Ogre Tactics. I'm giving that a go, and I'm enjoying it a lot. So I'm going to look for all the old games that were good that I missed, and I'm going to play them. And I could play them on my PC, but there's something nice about having like a little self-contained thing that I can just, you know, relax with and play old games. And no nostalgia. I don't have nostalgia. Even the games that I played back in the day, I don't want to play them now. They were rubbish, like by modern standards. But there has to be good old games that I've missed, and I'm going to go back and play some of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right, this device, yeah, this fucking 30 quid came with an
That's good
SD
for
card.
30.
Everybody recommends to replace the SD card that you get because it's not very good. But it comes with an SD card with 25,000 games on it, which is obviously deeply illegal, but they don't care. It's China. They distribute the thing with 25,000 games on it. Yeah, I replaced because Anjun warned me. Anjun said like there's going to be so many duplicates and like misnamed things and like you should probably, yeah. So I downloaded a curated set of ROMs from somewhere. But yeah, 30 quid, 25,000 games out of the box. Came from China in 5 days. It's yeah,
That's
recommend.
amazing. I
The
mean, I
Mio
presumably
Mini
what from China in 5 days.
from China in 5 days. Yeah, literally. Like, because a very detailed Chinese tracking site as well. And yeah, it was on the plane within the first day of me ordering it.
This is well.
And yeah, came by plane,
That's amazing.
which is,
That, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I'm a little bit similar in that.
Also, free postage.
That's amazing.
5 days. I
Someone
mean,
that's
environmentally, that's a fucking disaster.
someone
But
died to get you that. That's
yeah.
I'm a bit like that with game. Like I like game jam games a little bit, you know,
Yeah,
like and just browsing the weird corners of itch because that's like what because my you know my thing is like I like it when there's a mechanic, and that mechanic that is the game, right? Like I like games that revolve around a.
sure.
So you that's quite a common thing in game jam games where they've just done a few levels around they've got a, they've developed their like gameplay loop and they've just given you a few levels to run around it really and I kind of like
Yeah.
that and I don't because to me it's like also because it I can play a little bit of a game and then I can just move on to the next game and the next game and I know it sounds it's games as an experience, right? Like I know that's like me trying to sort of sell games as a service, but it's like I'm going to play this game for a couple of hours, and I might not
Well,
ever come back.
it's not, yeah, no, it's not like an experience in that. It's like games as a buffet, right?
Games
Like
as a buffet.
delicious bottles that do one thing perfectly, and like that was great. Now the next one, kind of thing. That's not how I know. That's how you get. I don't game like I want to sink into a game for hundreds of hours. But you're more like, I want the perfect expression of this idea, and then I want to move on.
Games as a buffet. That's that, yeah, or as an
Yeah,
amuse-bouche or something like that. You know, it's like
amuse-bouche. Yeah, that's the most
amuse-bouche.
pretentious way we can say it.
Because that's
What's the mouthfeel of this game?
exactly. Like it's that's it. Like, what is the how do you feel when you play this game? That's kind of what it is in a lot of cases. Like with like even with Open Transport Tycoon Deluxe, I like the just the satisfaction the feel of having like the little network like that it's a feeling that is just like but yeah with
That is the thing that old games did better. Yeah, they did concentrate more on even the big games, because OpenTTD is a very big game, but it had one thing that you do. It's about net, whereas if they made that now, there'd be like more of a managerial side and more of like hiring and firing, all the superfluous tangential stuff that I don't that always ruins games for me. It's like
Too much.
old football games, as in soccer. Or football games. It's just like you play, like sensible soccer and kickoff and give it to. You just play the game, and now, like, if that came out, it would have it. Like, there's games like that on Steam now, but it's like it does that, but it's also got the management part. It's like, well, no, I just wanted that fucking part. Like, don't give me the fucking management part on top of that. I don't want it. I
And
don't play a
the
management game. I
management,
play a fucking management game.
I went through when I was quite young. Had never was never the biggest football fan, but went through a phase of Football Manager, enjoying the Football
Yeah, I think
Manager
a lot of
games.
people did, right?
I never went back to that since I was absolutely tiny, but I really like, I don't know, like, yeah, that's, I don't know, maybe,
I
oh,
know a
but.
lot of people, like nerdy people, who no interest in football, but went through a spell, a couple of years of playing the shit out of Football Manager. And what's really interesting to me is it didn't foster an interest in football. That's the really interesting part of it for me. It didn't make them in any way curious about football.
Well, because it's a statistics game, it's a spreadsheet game.
Yeah.
The football is just the it, you know,
The
like,
flavor.
yeah. It's the thing is as well with it is with oh God. Oh, they I did notice that I'm kind of surprised that I never went back to that trend because there are quite a lot of like football management games that were that natively work on Linux, and
Yeah.
you can you obviously you can work out why quite easily because they're not particularly complicated games,
Yeah.
but I always feel like as a long-standing like ally to Linux, it's weird how more of us haven't actually picked them up. Like it's
Yeah. They are kind of the nerdiest. The football management games really are kind of the nerdiest games that there are.
And it's kind of weird that you don't hear more about it on like the Feddy or anything like that, which
Yeah,
is.
they are, like you say, they are literally games made of spreadsheets.
And like it's like I remember when Borderlands 2 was big in the Linux community because it was one of the earlier well-known games to actually get a native Linux release itself. I bet I know more Linux users that remember that sort of time of the Borderlands 2 than any of the Football Manager, official games.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad game, but it's not a game I would necessarily pick up if it wasn't one of, I in some ways I do kind of miss the days of ch limited choice.
I've been thinking that increasingly, yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, go on.
I mean, I say that, in one breath I say games is a buffet, but in another breath I say, well, there's too many games.
Well, when you, I mean, this is well-trodden ground, I think, but like when you had fewer, back in the day with kids growing up, I had an Atari ST, I had a Commodore 64 and then an Atari ST, and I could afford, I'd get a game for Christmas, and I could afford, during the course of the year, I could afford maybe one or two games, right, as a kid. So that's about three games a year. So first of all, you were very careful about what you bought, and secondly, like, you milked every drop of enjoyment out of those games that you possibly could. You didn't. Whereas now, I'll pick up a game on Steam for like, £7, and if it doesn't grab me within 3 seconds, I'm like, oh, it's boring. I'll come back to it later and never come back to it,
And boy, would you get every drop of enjoyment out of the shareware CDs as well. See, that is for me, right? In terms of that, it's one of the few ways that I still buy games that I don't know about. The other being word of mouth, there have been a small handful of games that because they've given me a free sample, as it were, have I yeah, that's by that's the highest conversion rate of, all right, you give me a few levels to know if I like the gameplay loop, and I'll put the money
I've
down.
noticed more and more games on Steam are doing demos. There is somebody on Fedi noted this, and I agreed. A lot of them are releasing the demo as if it's a game in unto itself and calling it like title of the game, like prologue, which is a bit cynical, but I get, like, it's very hard to get noticed on Steam. I don't begrudge them that. I'm fine with them putting a demo out as a free game. And yeah, I've been playing demos, and yeah, it's kind of nice to play demos and get like proper, because demos, some of them make the mistake of giving you too little. Some give you too much and you only need the demo, but like some give you too little. You've got to have a proper taste of the game. And yeah, I've been playing a bunch of demos and bought a couple of games from that actually.
I mean, my spicy hot take is that the original Wolfenstein 3D game, the demo was plenty enough for the game of the like you had like was it 8 chapters or whatever, and no one I know played past chapter one, which was and they gave you the whole of chapter one as the shareware
But you've had
demo.
enough at that point, yeah.
Yeah, that you can play through that. That is easily like 6 to 8 hour game, which is a perfectly good length for a game. I don't know why,
There's
you know, like.
a funny example of that. Stop me if I've talked about this before on when we've been recording, but Delta Force 2, which was the first FPS that I seriously played. It's a military online multiplayer. It's got a single player campaign, but it's mostly about the multiplayer. But the demo of that had everything that was in the main game in terms of the multiplayer. You could play on any multiplayer game. You were just limited to like three or four weapons rather than 15, right? But because of that, the game had better balance. Like the additional weapons actually made the multiplayer game worse. So a lot of people just played the demo. We all owned the full game, but we mainly played the demo because it was a better game. And you could load all of the maps in. You could just like stick them in the folder and load all of the maps in. So there was a huge community who just played the demo online.
And actually one of my favorite games of all time, Don't Starve Together, it's still being updated and I kind of don't really need them to add more and more stuff in at this stage. The game itself is kind of like getting too big and changing too much. Like you've done it, you know, like I appreciate that it, you know, like you don't have to do the work, right? But they've changed up the farming mechanics and they keep adding new
No, I think what
characters and
happens,
it's like
say it's a game you've not played for a few months and like, oh, I fancy playing, Don't Starve, say. Yeah, I fancy playing Don't Starve. And it's like, oh, but so much has changed and I'd have to learn it all. And like, so I'm not going to bother. Like, I get a lot of that with games, yeah.
It's I get that there's quite a big community that they want to keep. I mean, you don't pay a subscription, you literally just buy the game, so I don't even know why
I
they're
mean,
making s
we're not, being down on the devs for keeping their game up today. It's great that they keep adding stuff, for the people who want to keep playing it. But
absolutely.
are people still buying it? I guess they must be.
It's just I for us casuals, it's just like they're doing a lot of work that doesn't seem to. Maybe
That's a
they're.
problem on Steam in general. This is a particular problem with RPGs and roguelikes, I think. When they do early access, and obviously on their forums, the most hardcore players are going to be the most vocal, and they just want more. They're like, I've completed it like 15 times. I need it to be. It's too easy. Make it harder. Make it harder. Make it harder. So these games keep getting fucking harder and harder and harder, which means that anybody like me who just buys it at release or buys it late in early access, the game's fucking impossible at that point. There was one called there's something tact Crawl Tactics. And that very much suffered from that problem. Like it was too hard to begin with, and then all the hardcore fans just kept asking them to make it harder, and they responded to that, making it harder and harder. And they've actually re recently released a patch to make it easier because they sort of realized that they were catering to like 1% of their audience, and like everybody else was being put off by that. So that's kind of interesting.
Interestingly enough, actually, the one gaming community that I have absolutely really enjoyed lately is the Project Zomboid community. I don't really, like I'm not very vocal there, but I do sort of read up on some of the community memes and that kind of stuff. And it seems like it's a very wonderful, like just from what I've seen so far, quite a wonderfully like inclusive and non-elitist kind of
I think that's right. Yeah, again, I think like somebody commented on our video, like I think there's a maturity, and again, not necessarily about age, it's about emotional maturity. I think there's a maturity to the audience with that game because of the kind of game that it is. On the other hand, like I enjoy Zomboid. I've played Zomboid with you. I've played it with other people. I enjoy Zomboid. It's a very good game, but there is no excuse for the state of that game, given how long it's been in development. There's no fucking excuse for that. For that fucking UI and control mechanism, there's no fucking excuse for it.
The UI is hilariously bad, but you can see that they've put all of their time and effort into other bits. Or that they've gotten so used to it that they can't change it. Like
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, but the number of times I die, and it really matters when you die in that game, right? The number of times I die because my character's facing one way when it should be facing the other way, based on, you know, what I think it should be facing the other way, and it's like so incredibly crazy.
Yeah, but
Good game though.
great game,
Good
love
game,
it.
good community.
Yeah. Right, should we wrap it up there?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
It sounded good to me. And cool. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody at home. Thank you for the lovely comments you spent your time spending on us last time.
Thank
And
you for this. I can't even.
yeah. And yeah. All right. See you next time, and leave lots of comments.